This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2016, held at Faith Builders on August 1 through 5.
Okay, good morning. Welcome. I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Diana.
Salad.
Real salad.
We have a 1.5-year-old son.
And we have a 4-year-old daughter.
We're here this morning to talk to you about communicating with your students. Now, there's something you need to understand before we get started here. And that is that truth and relationship are a double helix. Double helix comes from your DNA, if you're not familiar with that term. Two strands. And so, what we're saying is that truth and relationship go together. And that's because truth is a person. Jesus is a person. So essentially, how you communicate is as important as what you communicate. Your DNA that you pass on to your students in your communication and your teaching will live on long after you have died.
So basically what he's saying is that teaching is about much more than academics. Perhaps you've heard the saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Think about a fourth grade girl that you may have who just lost her mother to cancer. Don't you think what she needs is a few more flashcards and a little bit more geometry? Or what about a sixth grade boy who comes to your school and just seems sullen and angry, and what he really wants is a relationship with his dad? I think it's going to help him to read some more science. Or do another math paper. Probably not. What these students really want is a relationship with you. They want to connect with you and feel that you care about them.
And when we think back over the long scope of history 100 years ago in this country, the rod was used a lot to, as the other side here, we have the truth and then we use the rod to drive it into you. So we've come a little further than that today, but it's not enough to just not drive the information into our students. We have to go further and learn how to relate well to them. And to do that, we need to understand how the brain is wired. So, left brain, right brain. How many of you are familiar with this concept? Okay, most of you. So the left brain is logical, literal, linguistic, linear. You like words, numbers, logic, analysis, and this is a little more on my side over here. And then right brain, a little more over there. Colors, daydreaming, 3D, rhythm, imagination, relationships, holistic thinking, nonverbal expressions, eye contact, tone of voice, that kind of thing.
As a teacher, we tend to teach to the left side. After all, we need to cover all this content, don't we? But what about the right side? Are you missing the right side of your students' brains? The strategies that we're going to present to you, which we adapted from a book called The Whole Brain Child, are strategies that will help you communicate with your students so that you can connect to their whole brain, not just the left side of the brain. The first one we'd like to present to you is connect and redirect. Yes?
Why do we have to learn this?
Sometimes it seems really hard, doesn't it? Why do you think we need to learn this?
I don't know.
I would often say, give me at least one reason. There are times in my life when I have to do things I don't enjoy doing. Thinking is hard work, but it helps your brain to grow. Sometimes a question is more loaded, and this actually happened to me. Okay. Yes, Johnny.
Why do we have to learn this? When I take my algebra home, my dad doesn't know how to help me. He said he never had to learn it.
Are you asking because you really want to know, or because you want to argue about it? Do you really want to know, or are you just asking to argue about it? Yeah?
I really want to know.
You think you would really like to know?
Yeah.
Okay, are there any of you who don't want to know? Okay. You two can go out, stand in the hall, close the door, and behave. And I have to tell you, when I did that, the look on my students' faces just changed. They were no longer feeling defiant or angry. It was like their face opened up and they were actually ready to talk about it. Math seems really hard at times, doesn't it? Why do you think you need to learn this? What do you think happens in your brain when you learn new and difficult things? And I would often give them time to answer this, but we're not taking time for that this morning. Have you actually thought about the fact that school is much more about learning? It's about building pathways in your brain. It's about learning facts and things that help your brain to develop. And not only that, but you're preparing yourself for the real world, as some people tend to call it. You're preparing yourself for life in God's kingdom. So why do you have to learn this? It's much more than just memorizing facts or learning things. It's about you growing. It's about your brain growing. And it's about preparing you for life in God's kingdom. Okay, you two may come back in. And by the way, don't even tell them what we talked about. They probably won't even want to know. Connect and redirect. First of all, I suggest that you connect with your students. Help them feel understood. Have you tried repeating back to them what they just said to you, even if you don't agree with them? Okay, so you're telling me you don't want to do this. Or you're feeling really upset right now, aren't you? It's amazing how much students feel understood when you repeat back to them what they just said to you. Don't you like when students repeat to you what you've just said to them? So connect with them and help them feel understood. Listen to your students. When was the last time you had a one-on-one conversation with them? I think you should talk to your students one-on-one and not in front of the other students. Somewhere in the back of the classroom, in a little room in your school that you have for this purpose. Certainly not in front of all the other students. When was the last time that you talked to your students one-on-one? Maybe a lot of you are new teachers. I challenge you, talk to your students one-on-one at least once a year. It would be much better if it would be twice a year or four times a year. And let me tell you a secret. They will notice if you spend a lot of time talking with one student and not talking to them. Students pick that up. If it's the troublemaker that you're talking to, it doesn't matter. If they're the best student. If they're a really good student academically, they want to be talked to as well. And when you talk to them, listen to your students. Ask them questions and expect an answer. My students soon caught on that if I asked them a question and they shrugged their shoulders or said, I don't know, that wasn't good enough. I would often say, if they would say, maybe, then I would say, I don't know what maybe means. Or if they would say, yes or no, then I would say, do you mean yes or do you mean no? And wait for an answer. You can sit for a long time and wait for an answer. And it's important that they get those answers out. Because a lot of these children are not being listened to. And so they have to act out in other ways to try to get people to pay attention to them. connect with your students, listen to them, ask them questions, and wait till you get an answer. And then lastly, redirect them. Redirect them from how they've just acted out, or how Johnny was defiantly saying, "Why do we have to learn this?" And when he was, in one sense, trying to say, "I really don't want to do this. Do I have to do this?" Redirect them and help them to think about why they may want to do it. Just before we were leaving here, our four-year-old daughter, I asked her, we were trying to pack up and get left, and I asked her to wash the dishes. "I don't want to, Mommy." And I said, "Oh, you don't want to?" "No." And so I took her by the hands and I got down on her level and I said, "Shayna, I packed your suitcase, I packed Cedric's suitcase, I packed my suitcase," and I listed all the things, and you could see her eyes getting bigger and bigger. "Are you willing to wash the dishes, Shayna?" "Yes." And she went and washed the dishes. So I redirected her from the fact that she does not want to do this to, "Oh, okay, I guess I could do this. Look at all that Mommy is doing." So redirect them, help them set goals. This strategy, connecting and redirecting, can be used in many different ways for different students in different locations. It might be you might need it this year for a troublemaker that you know you're going to have. Or what about the class clown? Really, why is he acting out? Or think about a quiet student who just sits there and doesn't work. There are lots of different situations that you can use this strategy for. If you have two or three students who are involved, it's usually best to take them aside and listen to their stories separately rather than having all three gang up against you. Try taking them out one by one and listening to their stories and sorting through it and figuring out what really is happening here, what really are they saying? Okay, Jeremy would like to tell you more about.
So we're sharing mainly two sources today with you, as you can see at the end of your handout. What's interesting is that my wife arrived at a lot of what she's sharing with you from practical experience in her teaching and talking with her mother and talking with her students. And she helped me grow in that area some as well after we got married. And so she really connected with the whole-brained child. And then I went to a teacher's convention a few years ago and sat under Jeff Myers and connected with Cultivate. And we used this book with my staff last year. And so I'd like to share to you what I consider the heart of this book, three-step method that relates to connect and redirect from a different source. So this is from Myers' Cultivate. "Sometimes withholding advice does more good than dispensing it. We have to recognize sometimes we talk too much, and it's better to lead our students to a good conclusion than to just tell them what the conclusion would be. The process of them getting there on their own gives them the ownership to, okay, then I actually want to take this action because I arrived at the conclusion on my own rather than just what the teacher told me." So three steps strategy, or three steps of coaching, he calls it. Step one is active listening. This can apply to any situation that you're relating to your students or any relationship in your life. The first point I'd like to share under active listening is a story from the book here about Mrs. T. One thing that Mrs. T did really struck me. Every day, she spent a full 30 minutes of classroom time intentionally listening to her fourth graders. The kids would have silent reading for that half hour, and one by one, she would call them to her desk. She'd turn over a one-minute hourglass, look them right in the eye, and they could tell their teacher anything they wanted. This was the kids' favorite time of the day. They loved it. She told me she did this because she was teaching children, not math or reading or science. So, make sure your students feel heard. Look in their eye. Active listening means you're not correcting papers at the same time. You're giving them your undivided attention, and they feel heard. So first of all, listen to them. Number two, ask good questions to lead them on. And I'd like to share a story again from the book about Mrs. L.
Mrs. L built a relationship with me. I don't necessarily remember what she taught me, but I specifically remember how she would let me stay and work in her classroom after the other children were gone. As I helped her clean the desks and chalkboard, she asked simple, gentle questions that invited me to share my young life with her. She asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. She asked me about my family. She asked me about what I enjoyed. Why did her inquisitiveness matter to me? We all know the old saying, people buy from people they like. Children work hard for teachers they like. So you can lead them on with good questions. For example, tell me more about that. This could be something that they're inquisitive about, or it could be a relationship problem. They come in screaming to you that, you know, Mommy hit me or whatever. Tell me more about that. Get them to unload and then ask good questions. Why do you think that happened? What were you doing at the time? Etc. So get them to talk. And then, number three, set worthy goals. And I'd like to mention here, Jesus asked 288 questions in the Gospels. And think about it, he already knew the answers to all those questions. So he asked them anyway. This just shows how important good questions are to relationships, to sparking thinking and engagement in your students. So follow Jesus' example and get them to name some goals or some solutions to this problem. What are two things you think you could try? Interestingly enough, if you ask them to share, what do you think you should do? Or what is one step we could take to solve that problem? It is more likely that they will say, I don't know. Then if you ask them to name two or three things, what are several things you think I could do? Maybe this or this or this. Okay, now pick one of them. Because if you ask them what do you think you should do, they just immediately think that they have to come up with the one best solution and they're stumped. But if you communicate, just share several ideas, maybe they can spit some out and say, well, just pick one of them and see what you can do. So, try these three steps when communicating with your students in any situation that you don't know what to do in. Connect with them, listen to them, ask them good questions, and then redirect them by getting them to suggest some solutions and then ask them to pick which one they'd like to try.
Or even if you think you do know what to do. Think back to our left brain, right brain illustration. When a student is having a problem, as it were, they're acting primarily out of their right brain. They're being flooded with emotions. So as you take them through these steps and help them to think to set goals, they are slowly moving into using their left brain. And when they connect the whole brain, they're going to be able to think about the situation in an entirely different light than if they're just using their right brain. Any questions so far? No? Okay, it's your turn. Now it's your chance to connect and redirect. We want you to either think of a scenario that one of your students may have had, or you think one of your students might have, or a situation that you have had, and divide into groups of two or three or four, or however many you want to around you, and practice connecting and redirecting. The top part of our slide is missing. These are some suggestions that we have for you. It's supposed to say, why do I have to clean the school or wash the dishes? You fill in the blank. Or I don't want to do this. I don't want to play basketball. Those are just some examples for you if you don't have any that pop into your mind. So you have 5 minutes. Turn to someone beside you, come up with a situation, connect and redirect. at least some of them, you're connecting and redirecting. Connect it and redirect was the first strategy. The second one is, oh, there comes our top part. Can you tell I'm learning? Name it to tame it. Name it to tame it. Let's jump right in. First, we're going to look at memories. What comes to your mind when you think of memories? We all have good memories, and we all have these bad memories we'd rather not think about. We have memories that bring us warm, fuzzy feelings, and memories we don't want to think about at all, or we think about it all the wrong times. That happens to your students, too. Think about your brain. Back to your brain. Do you think your brain is like a file drawer? Are all the memories and images that you have stored in there, ching, 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 one after the other, and you simply open up the drawer and pull out memory 283? That would be nice. Sadly, our brain is not like a file drawer. Rather than storing files alphabetically or incidentally, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we store them by association. The brain processes whatever's in the present and links it with a previous experience in the past. So we have positive memories. I often have to think about the sweet and sour chicken that I ate in China. And I wasn't sure about eating Chinese food when I went to China, but I loved the sweet and sour chicken. This stuff is really good. And before I went to China, I was not a fan of Chinese restaurants. But I thought, oh wow, if I could get sweet and sour chicken, I would enjoy it. So I went to my first Chinese restaurant in America, and the sweet and sour chicken was not good. I'm still not a fan of Chinese restaurants. But I have that memory of sweet and sour chicken. Every time I hear the word, every time I smell it or see it, I think, oh, that would be wonderful. Until it isn't. So my memories of sweet and sour chicken are different. They're not all filed one after the other. Students who got 100% on the last test will think, oh, I can get 100% on this test. Or you may have a student who failed the last test. What are they going to think? I'll get 100%? No. They're going to think, I'm going to fail this test too. It's not even worth studying. Why study? I'm going to fail. Do you see how those things are stored in their brains? It's no wonder they come out with things other than what we expect them to. I couldn't get this problem the last time. Just going to skip it. So we know that our memories are not stored like a file drawer. Here's another question for you, and this one is on the test. Not really. Do the memories in your brain work like a photocopier works? You simply photocopy the memory or the paper exactly as it is, and that's how it's stored in your brain? Now you're not sure if you should answer yes or no, because the first one felt like a trick question. Sadly, your brain does not work like a photocopier either. Every time you recall a memory, it gets altered. It somehow gets changed. Thankfully, our photocopiers don't do that. They copy exactly like you want them to. But your brain doesn't work quite the same. Think about a childhood memory that you have. You may start telling this wonderful childhood memory to all your family members, and your dad says, that's not how it happened. But that's how you remember it as a child. And every time you recall it, it's going to be changed just a little bit. And maybe the lollipop you had back then seems much bigger than it actually would be right now. Or, like I said before, if you have two or three students who are involved in an incident, take them aside, talk to them separately. They'll probably all tell you something different. And if they're all together, they'll probably argue about, no, that wasn't how it was. I saw he was out. I'm sure he was. They're all going to see things differently. Even policemen are smart enough to know that when they're at a crime scene, they're not going to ask all the witnesses all together. They're going to take them apart separately and interrogate them. So your brain is not like a photocopier. Students bring the memories that they have with them. We think that because we are teaching in these conservative schools, we're going to have very good families and students who don't have any pain, any hurts, any bad memories. But either I taught in really bad schools or my experience was different than yours, I found that I have a lot of students who are hurting. A lot of students who have memories stuffed down in them. They have no way of dealing with them. They pop up at all the wrong times and can create incidents in your classroom. So if you're stepping into the classroom for the first time, I'll warn you, you will have students who are asking for help. And sometimes those are the students who act out the most. The students that I remember dealing with the most are the ones who had the most pain and who brought with them the most situations from home and the things that affected them. We expect the students to come from good homes and not have any hurts. Most families do very well at hiding these hurts. As Mennonites, it's not really okay to have pain, and so you just stuff it down in and hide it. Some students have a lot of repressed anger or are dealing with sadness, like the fourth grade girl I mentioned about. Sometimes they were verbally abused that morning before they came to school. Is it any wonder they sit there and just look at you or look down at their desk? Is it any wonder they don't want to work? It's hard for me to work when I'm feeling pain. You imagine a child who doesn't know how to deal with their pain trying to work. So I'm not saying that they shouldn't work, but as you learn how to name it to tame it, then you'll help your students to be able to move past that and be able to do their work. These students may act out in anger or get into an argument about whether or not they were caught. I wasn't caught. I touched you. No, you didn't. You have those times. Or maybe they'll punch someone for no reason at all. Or maybe someone says something to them and they hit them because of what they said. And it wasn't that they were really upset at what the person said to them. It's more that it's just the stroll that broke the camel's back. They were angry when they came to school already in the morning. And this is just their way of lashing out at them. Think about what's going on in their brain. Their right side of their brain is being entirely flooded with all kinds of emotions and bodily sensations. So we want to connect this brain. How are we going to move from right to left? I suggest that you get them to tell stories. Now, not just any story, although sometimes a student has a story to tell you that will help them to open up, but I suggest that you get them to tell you what happened, just like Jeremy said. Tell me more about that. Why are stories effective? Because when you tell a story, you usually tell it in the order it happened, right? Which side of the brain do you need for that? The left side. Your logical side is going to tell you the order that it happened in. So as you connect these brain, both sides of the brains, it brings about a whole brain experience. Tell stories. It's one of the best ways to get them talking. Journaling also has the same effect. Sometimes you as a teacher are in the middle of class or you need to help three other students and you simply don't have time to go to Cindy and say, why aren't you doing your work today? So you can go to her and say, I noticed that you're having trouble getting your work done. Do you want to write about that? Maybe she doesn't, but you could say, here's a piece of paper. Write about what you're feeling. And sometimes that can simply help in the moment. They simply write down what they're feeling. Or sometimes you take a student out and it seems like they just are not going to be able to answer any questions or they are not ready to talk about the situation. Then I have already said, okay, you can sit here for a while, think about it, and when you're ready to talk, come and get me. Or would it be easier for you to write down what happened rather than telling me? And sometimes, yes, they would like that, so they can write what happened and I can read that and we can talk about it later on. So those are several options. Have them tell you what happened. Let them write it down, or tell them that when they're ready to talk to you about it, then you would like to hear. So have them tell stories. I had a 6th and 7th grade class one year that was full of troublemakers, I guess is one way to describe it. And the first, I knew about this. The Lord had warned me that it was going to be a very challenging year. So I prepared myself for this very challenging year. And I walked in the first day of school, and I came home totally depressed. And I don't know that my mom had ever really seen me depressed. And she was rather amazed and could not figure out why I was so depressed. And to this day, I'm not exactly sure why, except that I think they wouldn't talk. I couldn't get them to say anything. And I had had some of these students 2 years before. I came to Faith Builders and did the TAP program the 2 years in between that. So I had had some of these students, and I knew they liked to talk. In fact, they talked a lot. And I didn't know how I was going to get these students on board with me. And it took 2 weeks before they finally, before the first grade teacher said, "Miss Real, you have these students on board with you." But in between that, we had, I think school maybe started on Friday, and the following Thursday we were going to have music class. And I was excited about music class. I knew these students could sing. Some of them were very talented singers. So I got up and I said, "Okay, class, it's time for music class." And you could just hear this groan go across the room, and I thought, oh no, music class is not going to work if these students are not willing to participate. I was going to have them do vocal exercises, and we were going to sing funny songs, because I knew that they probably were not, didn't really want to have music class. I already knew that in my head. So I had gone out of my way to prepare a fun music class, and these groans come across the classroom, even from the students who I knew could sing and enjoyed singing. And I thought, oh no. So I said, "Okay, what is it that you don't like about music class?" And they kind of looked at me, and I asked them again, "So what is it that you don't like about music class?" And finally, hands started to go up, and we made a list on the chalkboard of all these things they didn't like. "Well, it's boring, and we didn't like our books last year, and we didn't like the songs we had to sing last year," and I can't remember everything, but the list kept growing and growing. And when one child said, "It's boring," I said, "Well, then I can't teach you the Crazy Moose song." And one of the girls raised her hand and said, "I know that song, Miss Real." And I said, "Is it boring?" She said, "No." "I'm sorry, then I can't teach it to you." And finally, I could tell they had pretty much expressed, they had pretty much named all the memories they had of music class. And when they were done, I took a turn and I said, "You know, class, I'm actually really disappointed in you. I was looking forward to teaching music class this year. And we were going to do a lot of fun things. But if you are not into it, it is not going to work." And it was amazing. Once they had named everything, how they came down and actually wanted to hear what I had to say. And that was the end of class. And that night was parent-teacher meeting. And I said, "Oh," I think it was close to the end of the day, I said, "Whoever erases the board today, don't erase that list. We're going to let it up. Your parents are coming tonight, and that way they can see how you feel about music class." "No, no, you may not let that up." And they were so adamant about it. I was surprised at how adamant they were. And so I said, "Okay, we're going to let it up, and I'll show it to the principal, and I'll see what he thinks. If he thinks we should erase it, I'll erase it." And after school, the principal came in, "No, he doesn't think we should erase it." So we let it up, and there was only one set of parents whose student had actually told them about it, and they came in and looked at it. I don't think the other parents even saw it. So that was the first music class. The second music class, I did not mention the word music. I said, "You know, you all have been sitting for a while. Why don't you stand up and let's do some stretches?" And we started stretching, and we did some vocal exercises, and they loved it. And by the end of the second or third music class, they were saying, "When's music class? When can we have music class?" So give your students opportunity to tell you what's on their mind. Help them to name it. And once they've named it, then that really helps to tame it. And they're ready to move on, like we said, to redirect. Okay, it's your turn. Oh, whoops. Telling stories involves both sides of the brain. All right, I missed that one.
Okay, so now it's your turn. Again, turn to a partner or small groups And you can use one of these scenarios or come up with one of your own and see if you can name it to tame it. Susie comes in crying. Sally says she doesn't like my dress. Or you look out the window and you see John and Bennett fighting. What are you going to do? Go. Time to move on to the third point, engage, don't enrage. And to understand this point, you need to understand upstairs brain, downstairs brain. And so the little diagrams on your handout there help you with this. Sometimes you may have heard a child say, I'm sure you never said this, but you're the worst sister in the world. Or, I hate you. Now, how can they say that? Do they really mean that? You don't mean that. We go ahead and tell them, hey, you don't mean that. Don't say that. Take that back. And that might be your temptation to respond like that. But where's that coming from? So that kind of just visceral automatic reaction is coming from what we'll call the downstairs brain. Downstairs brain is impulsive. Okay, you know that your brain is controlling many things right now, right? You're producing red blood cells, your brain is controlling your breathing, that you're not thinking about those automatic type of functions. And sometimes we have automatic reactions that just come out of us, and then we wonder, why did I say that, right? So students often act out of their downstairs brain, and as parents and teachers, we're worried about how they're going to act when they're out of our presence, you know. I know my student has a problem with anger, and so I wonder what's going to happen. You know, Cedric and Shane are being babysat right now. I hope they're not fighting each other. So what can we do to train them not to just act out of their downstairs brain? And what can we do besides don't say that, or you shouldn't have said that? That's what we want to look at here in point three. So upstairs, downstairs brain is sort of like left brain, right brain. We want to bring them together and use both. Upstairs brain, then, is more, they're both necessary. Downstairs brain is necessary, but it's more balanced if they're using their upstairs brain as well. Upstairs brain is more big picture. Think of the windows on the top, like we have skylights here. So when you think lofty thoughts, you're getting the rational part of your brain then, working with your automatic. So planning, thinking, imagining are listed there in upstairs brain. So it's more thinking, more big picture. Downstairs brain are where temper tantrums come from. The downstairs brain is literally flooded with activity. And it's like a gate is across and you can't get to the upstairs part of your brain and think rationally. So we need to help our students open that gate, connect both parts of their brain, and engage, don't enrage.
Okay, class is over. Your math assignment today is lesson 47. In case you can't see in the back, he's not working. What would you do? Think of two things that you could do with a student who sits there not working. Penny, for your thoughts, how are you planning to get your work done? It could be very tempting to say, get to work, which would probably just enrage them. How are you planning to get your work done? Does the assignment seem too big for you?
Yeah, I'll never be able to get done.
I sometimes wonder how I will ever get my work done, too. How many problems do you think you could get done till recess time?
One.
You still have 30 minutes until recess. Will it take you 30 minutes to do one problem?
Probably.
Wow, you're going to need a lot of paper. Do you think you could do one problem in 5 minutes?
If it's an easy one.
If you do one problem every 5 minutes, then how many problems will you get done before recess?
6.
You just did that one problem in 30 seconds. Choose 6 problems you think you can do. If you get done with those and have more time, see how many you can get done. How does that sound?
Okay.
That really happened to me. I had a student who would sit there after math class, and he would sit there after math class, and 5 minutes later, he would still be sitting there after math class. So we tried all kinds of different things. We tried something like that. Some days it would work, some days it wouldn't. We tried setting a timer. Okay, Martin, see how long do you think it will take you to do this problem? 3 minutes. Okay, we'll set the timer for 3 minutes. See if you can get done before 3 minutes, though. Sometimes he would beat the time. Sometimes he would do it in 30 seconds or 1 minute, and sometimes it would take 5. But we kept trying. If that worked for a while, we'd try it for a while. And when it didn't work, we'd try something else. I remember telling him one day, I would like for you, and it actually got to be that whenever math class was over, I would just go back to Martin and say, okay, can you do 5 problems now? Or, you know, we would talk about what he's going to do that day. And I remember one math class, I told him if he would get the front half of his paper done, he would not have to finish the back half. I think it took a couple days until he did the whole first half. And not only that, but he did the entire lesson before recess, when he only had to do half. And that happened after weeks. And after we spent a lot of time talking, I would talk to him, and I would say, Martin, who do you think is going to hire you when you're out of school? Who's going to want to hire you if you sit there and don't work? How long do you think you will last on the job? And Martin was a very smart student. It wasn't that he had any trouble doing these problems. He could have done all of them in 30 seconds. And you could just see his brain clicking. And that conversation in particular, I think, impacted him when he thought about the fact that if he doesn't change now, if he doesn't start doing something differently, no one is going to want to hire him. How are you triggering the brains of your students? Are you engaging them? Let's see, do I have any? Are you engaging them or enraging them? How are you triggering your students to think throughout the day? Don't you just love those aha moments when you see the light bulb come on and they've learned something? Have you ever thought about that some of those aha moments are dependent on you? Yes, students will pick up different things at different times that really don't have that much to do with us or what we say, but there are times, I think, when we can actually trigger our students to have that aha brain moment. And we all love them, so why not try to create more of them? Not like you can manufacture them. We want to tweak brains to make them do what we want them to do. So here's your challenge. Engage your students. Get their gears cranking. And see how you can make a difference. My first year as a teacher was when I had Martin, whom we just acted out some of it. And I remember going home before I had all these strategies for him, before I had all these ideas of what to do. And I would tell Mom about this. And I'd say, Mom, what shall I do with Martin, who just sits there and won't work? And she would say, talk to him. And I said, talk to him? Talk to him? How is that going to make him do his math? How is that going to help him work? And she continued to coach me, and it was amazing the difference that it made. So I encourage you, try it. You have those students whom you know could use a little bit of talk time. Those students that you can engage. Those students who need taming.
I learned this from practicing it. And believe me, I'm still not perfect. But the more you do it, the more you learn. So try it. Do you like when your students say, I can't do this. I'm not going to do this. Well, I encourage you. Are you sitting here saying, I don't think I can communicate. I don't know about this. Or are you saying, you know, I think I could give it a try. Why not take one of my students? And I'll tell you something else. If you're scared about talking to a troublemaker who did something wrong, take them into a room, be quiet, and let them start talking. You don't always have to start talking first. Sometimes it's much better to get them to talk first. So that could be maybe one way you can start. If you're really not sure about doing this, take a student aside and just listen. Sometimes that's all they need. You might be surprised at the questions that start popping into your mind. Even the mistakes you make are opportunities for you both to learn and grow. You are communicating to them that they are important and that you care about them. And I just thought about it on the way up here that Martin, whom I was talking about, believe it or not, is now an accountant.
So as she said, it's amazing how many problems can be solved just communicating, talking with your students. And remember that as you communicate with them, you're communicating that you care, and you're also teaching them life skills. So it's more you're communicating to them that if you're taking the time to talk to them about something, it's more than just the here and now. You're communicating to them that helping them learn to work in the school setting is setting them up to work for the rest of their lives. It's important to tell stories. For instance, a story, I know a story about a masonry boss who said, you should be harder on your students in school, he said in math class. When you get into the real world, if you make a mistake in the masonry business, and one of his employees did this, on how many blocks you order, it can be a very expensive mistake. And so they shipped a couple extra tractor trailer loads of cement blocks to a job a couple hundred miles away and then had to ship them back. That gets very expensive. So communicate to your students that in the real world, a mistake can be very expensive. And remember the point I shared at the beginning. The way you communicate communicates as much as what you communicate. So take the time to communicate with your students.
In case you want to write it down, it's up here on the screen. The way you communicate communicates as much as what you communicate.
Okay, so that concludes part one. If you'd like to see what we have planned for tomorrow, the back of the handout show up here again tomorrow morning. And if you have any questions, feel free to come up afterwards. But that concludes part one. Thank you.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.